Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Leading Edge Love Radio. This is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach. Have you ever wondered how well-suited you are for ethical non-monogamy? Well, you can find out by taking my quiz, and you can find the quiz right on the homepage of my website, sumatisparks.com. That's S as in Sam, U, M as in Mary, A, T as in Tom, I, Sparks, as in Sparks Are Flying. And when you request the quiz, you'll be automatically added to my mailing list, and you'll be the first to learn about my virtual events and to receive occasional helpful tidbits of advice and information about how to add more love, passion, and joy into your life. So today I'm super excited to have as my guest my dear friend Ariel Giaretto. Ariel has been working in the field of body-focused therapies for over 20 years. She started out on the staff at the world-famous Esalen Institute in Northern California in the 90s, and she studied with many renowned teachers of somatic healing and sexuality like Carolyn and Charles Muir, Margot Anand, Jack Rosenberg, and Peter Levine, who is the creator of the somatic experiencing method. And she ended up being a senior faculty member of the Somatic Experiencing Trauma Institute, which trains professionals worldwide in trauma recovery. She's a certified somatic sex educator and has a private practice specializing in sexuality and prenatal early trauma. She is also a licensed marriage family therapist. Welcome to the show, Ariel.
Thank you, Sumi. It is really fun to do things with you because I love and adore you and respect you so much. So thank you so much for inviting me on your show. So
Thank you. I should say welcome.
Go ahead. I'm just saying it's always funny to hear someone read my bio. It's like, wow, that's me? As I get older, I just realize, my goodness, you know, I have had quite a lifetime of experience. And, a lot of how I got into what I do is because I've always been really interested in alternative sexuality and have practiced it really since I was 17, when I discovered I was bisexual and realized that I just really wanted to have fun have been, you know, for a very, very long time, really been a focus for me on how to have fun and be really open with sexuality. And Esalen really was an opening for me on so many levels. And I was there for almost 12 years, and I took complete advantage of all the incredible teachers that came through there, and I was able to learn everything I possibly could about the body. That's what's so beautiful about Esalen. And I think one of the things that was really useful for me was the fact that it's clothing optional. And to be naked with people for, you know, a decade, I learned about my body and actually learned to appreciate it there. And I did massage there, and I got to touch a lot of bodies. And so my interest in the body really flourished there. And like you said in my bio, I took full advantage of a lot of the sexuality classes that showed up, and so my sexuality really blossomed. What was problematic about being in Esalen is that it was a very transient environment. People came through there, and although I never got involved with what we called the seminarians, you know, the people that came through for a weekend or a week workshop, but I did have a lot of involvement with people on staff like myself. And because it was such a transient environment, I got my heart broken about every 20 minutes. It was really devastating for myself in terms of part of me that wanted to have fun, but I also, at that time, I was in my 30s. I also really wanted a partner, and Esalen is not a place for that. You don't find a partner at a human potential center. I had a lot of good sex, and I had a lot of fun, and I learned a lot about myself. But from the ability to drop in with someone and create long-term connections, that just wasn't a possibility. And so it ended up being a really great experience and a heartbreaking one. And I was doing lots and lots and lots of work on myself. And when I finally did meet Peter Levine, which was in 1999, and his work, Somatic Experiencing, took me into an even deeper layer of connection to myself, I realized that I needed to launch and get out of Esalen if I was going to have any kind of a real life. It was such a paradise there. I think it's probably not unlike what it's like to live in Hawaii, you know, where it's beautiful most of the time and there's incredible people, and it was really paradise. And it was after 12 years, it was very, very difficult to leave, but I did, and I'm glad I did, because it allowed my career to really launch. At that same time, I was studying pre and perinatal trauma and doing a lot of work on my very, very, very young self, actually, from in utero on. And it was doing that work, like really going back and reworking my little one, is when I started to develop more skills in terms of healthy attachment and healthy being in relationship and being able to make different choices about who I was attracted to. So that was a really big turning point in my life. And so for a long time, I was working with people on their very, very early pre and perinatal and developmental trauma. And I was also working with pregnant women. And working with pregnant women was wonderful, and helping them prepare for labor and delivery and doing postpartum care and all of that. So that was another way that I started. That was kind of the start of working with sexuality, because many of the women that I was seeing were having difficulties getting pregnant. And I realized that what was missing in infertility was they didn't have a pelvis. They just were not connected into their bodies. And they weren't necessarily even enjoying sex. And so here were all these women, many of them identified as queer, and many of them had pumped, you know, tens of thousands of dollars into trying to get pregnant. But they weren't happy in their sexuality. And so I saw this crossover between the pre and perinatal trauma, between infertility issues, and just a general lack of awareness of the body and the pelvis. And that launched me into wanting to study sexuality more. So so I thank my pregnant women and those that were struggling with infertility as really taking an even deeper dive into what I started to recognize was what I call sexuality trauma. And by sexuality trauma, I really genuinely feel that we are all touched by that. We are all the product of a culture, of a nation that, you know, the U.S., even though we're pretty out there about sex, we're also one of the more prudish cultures and countries. When I did a lot of work overseas and in Europe, I realized, wow, a lot of people are a lot more easy in their bodies than we are here. A lot more outwardly okay about sexuality, certainly about same-sex marriage and things like that. But we in this country, because we're, you know, based in this sort of Puritan ethic, we're really far behind. So I started to get very, very interested in how I could begin to help all people learn to feel comfortable in their bodies, which is actually something separate from sexuality. And the the major turning point for me again, so I've had all these turning points, but one of the major turning points for me was getting involved in the sex-positive communities. I took a lot of high workshops. Again, I was doing huge amounts of work on myself. I just loved high, and I loved all the different layers. What I realized about high, the Human Awareness Institute, for those of you who don't know it, is that the clients, as a therapist that I was working with, they would never have made it in a high workshop. It would have been, it's like Esalen. You know, a lot of people are not ready for nakedness. They're not ready to look at other people's genitals. And so I had to create some programs that were more appropriate to those who had severe trauma. And then that got me thinking about how can I do that? So here I was. I was in a number of sex-positive communities. I was really exploring polyamory, open relationships. I was navigating what you and I are doing this workshop on around jealousy. A lot of work on my own relationship to jealousy and, you know, and doing the pre- and perinatal work that I did really, really helped because I was attaching to myself in a different way. So there was just many, many years when it just felt like I was just coming alive with my own sexuality, the work that I was doing privately with people. I started to specialize in sexual trauma, and I went on a mission, which I'm still on, of where I want to help everybody find ease and pleasure and comfort and delight in their bodies. And one of the people in my community was telling me about sexological body work, and there was someone that was looking for people to practice on. And I had heard about sexological body work. I was very curious about it, and so I volunteered. And this was about 6 years ago. And I was lying on the table with this man who was a lovely, lovely man, and we had negotiated what kind of touch. I had pretty much given him permission. I said, I'm really open. I just want to feel what you have to offer. And as soon as he worked on me for about 10 minutes, I started to cry. In fact, I started to weep. And because he included every part of my body. You know, I was trained as a massage therapist to dance around nipples. You know, God forbid that you should get anywhere near genitals, right? It was like the red zone. You just, you know, it's like that's the nuclear zone. You don't get near it. It's dangerous. And for him to so seamlessly touch all of me, in a very non-sexual way. It was just, I see all of you, I welcome all of you, there's no part of you that isn't beautiful to me. That's what I was crying about, and I realized I was waiting all my life to be touched like that. I, of course, have had lots of lovers, and I've been blessed by some really good lovers. But I realize that when I'm in a sexual encounter with someone, that learning how to receive was still something that was challenging for me. And this kind of body work was all about receiving. And it was all focused on me. And I knew that, you know, when I'm in a lover situation, even though I might be receiving something really awesome, I'm still in my head going, well, what am I going to do to them? You know, well, I can hardly wait to, you know, do that to her or do that to him. You know, let me at him, right? And I'm not 100% present in the receiving. So that was a huge turning point where I realized that, first of all, I wanted to learn to do this. I jumped off the table after the first session and immediately went online and signed up for the training. And I didn't really have an intention of wanting to be a sexological body worker, but I wanted to learn everything I could about it. And it was life-changing. It was one of the best things that I've ever done, because I really, really learned everything I could possibly learn about penises, vaginas, anuses, you know, everything was welcomed and included, and I loved it, and it was very, very challenging at the same time. So that was a moment for me, and I realized as I was going through sexological training that there is so much more to being a lover, and there is so much more that even though I had had lots of really good sex, what the sexological bodywork kind of focuses on is basically the foreplay before the foreplay. And this whole idea of what is needed to awaken a body to pleasure. So I, again, was taking this training, and I realized 99.999% of my clients would never be ready for this. So how could I take what I learned in high, how could I take what I learned as a sexological body worker and create programs that work for people that aren't ready for those things? And so that's what I did. And so now I teach workshops, although they've all gone to hell since COVID, but I teach these workshops where I can help people find that those levels of embodiment without necessarily anybody else touching them, but they can find those levels of pleasure in their own body. And some of that is not even necessarily that they're self-pleasuring, but more that they're learning to delight in every centimeter of their body. So what started out as being... Yeah, it is beautiful. And what kind of started out as being my interest in sexuality sort of shifted to my interest in people just inhabiting all of themselves without shame, with joy, with pleasure, with celebration. And I just can't tell you how exciting it is to be able, you know, to do that kind of work. So that's kind of the evolution. And then, you know, of course, in my practice, I'm frequently negotiating how people can open up relationships and, you know, work with that. So that's a little piece of what I do as well. And so that's kind of...
Well, before you continue, if you could back off your microphone just a tad. It was a little poppy.
Oh, okay.
Not bad, just a little.
Okay.
But I just want to tell the audience that, you know, Arielle was feeling a little nervous. I asked her if we could go into her personal story more. And, boy, did you get out of the starting gate with a full speed ahead. You know? You had no problem there. So good for you. How does it feel in your body? I kind of halfway teased you saying, oh, you're nervous? Let's see how it feels in your body. So how does it feel in your body that you, you know, shared so much about your personal story?
Well, it's interesting, you know, because I listen all day to people's personal stories, but it's really hard for me to tell my own. I don't know why. It just is. I mean, it kind of rattled off my tongue because I know you, and I know I can say anything on this program, and no one would barely blush. But I can't usually tell my story to my classes, right? Although I do know a little bit about it. But, yeah, I mean, it's okay. I survived.
You did great. Yeah, I have so many questions to ask you now. Wow, that was just really great. So thank you for that. And so as you were learning more and more, you're learning about somatic experiencing, you're having all these fleeting relationships at Esalen. Everyone's naked all the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. You're working with pregnant women and their sexuality, and then you get into sexological body work and all this stuff. So can you give us like one or two examples of how your personal relationships evolved? Like what was like a, how did you apply all this learning to yourself? Like you said, you were doing work with your own little one, your own, prenatal experience. So maybe share some, one or two examples of how your relationships, what did you, you know, how you applied your own learnings to your own relationship, and then where are you now with your relationship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, starting with the pre and perinatal, part of my story, my pre and perinatal story, is that my mother didn't want to be pregnant, and I was the product of an affair. And she wanted nothing to do with me. I think she tried to abort me. She really didn't want me. And then when I came out, this was, you know, late 50s, where you really couldn't discover the sex of the baby without doing, like, amniocentesis, and I was a girl, she was, the words that she used was horrified. She didn't want a girl. She thought that if she had had a boy, that maybe my father, who was married, would have stuck around. But the fact that I was a girl, somehow that was it. You know, as I got to know my father as an adult, he actually preferred his daughters over his sons, so that's another story. But my prenatal story was so painful because I didn't know this. Growing up, I didn't know it cognitively, but I knew it somatically, intuitively, that there was something really, really wrong with my genitals. Like, I think that if it had been fashionable to be trans, I would have totally been trans. And I denied everything about myself as a girl, and I hated that I had breasts. They're not very big, but the little ones that I had, I was horrified by those. When I started menstruating, I was horrified by that, didn't even tell my mother for years. And when I had sex with boys, even though boys wanted a girl to have sex with most of the time, I always felt like they were, like, putting up with me. You know, they were, they didn't really want me, and that there was something really profoundly wrong with me being a girl. It's kind of crazy making when you think about it. And so I was very tomboyish. I was very athletic, which I know you can relate to. And I really denied those parts of myself and felt a huge amount of shame whenever anybody would even look at my genitals, my vulva. So part of the pre and perinatal work that I did was about redoing that. And what I mean by that is I started to, the work that I do with people is we call it reparative work. So we look at the trauma, but we look at and embody what woulda, coulda, shoulda happened. You know, what we call in somatic experiencing is what didn't get to happen. So I was able to begin to love and accept my girlness and my genitals and my entire girl body by redoing the prenatal. And so I imagined myself in a mother's womb that delighted in the fact that I was a girl, delighted. So I allowed myself to take in these messages, this imagination that I was in a body that really wanted a girl. And that was an incredible shift for me. And then when I imagined my birth story and I imagined everybody celebrating, oh, it's a girl, you know. And I did this over and over and over again. I did multiple sessions on accepting and embodying my body. And so what that did is it started to take shame away. It started to take this deep, deep, deep insecurity that I had about, well, any man that would be with me, what doesn't really want to be with me because I'm a girl, you know? And it's nuts, right? And that's where I found comfort in women. It's like when I had sexual contact with women, I realized how yummy I was. I mean, it really wasn't until I embraced other women and I felt their softness and how wonderful and beautiful their vulvas were, you know, that it was these sexual contacts that I had with women also allowed me to understand that, wow, there's something really cool about being a girl. And it took so much work in order to do that. And when I got away from Esalen, this was before, I didn't do this at Esalen, this is after I left Esalen, by working on accepting my body and accepting it as being, you know, a pretty cool thing, I started to attract and be attracted to different kinds of people. And and that just changed, changed everything. And I know that the prenatal work that I did is what allowed me to begin to accept all of myself a lot more fully. And I started to notice that instead of the kind of people that I would be attracted to, which was more about, you know, are they smart, are they conscious, are they spiritual, you know, all the things, all of our checklists, you know, are they good with animals, you know, I started to, not that I didn't care about that, but it was actually more based on their body, their nervous system, you know, are they connected to themselves? Are they present with themselves? Are they present with me? Are they celebrating being with me, which I would not have been able to experience had I not celebrated the fact that I had been born and that I was fine the way I was. So that's when six years ago today, I met Jeffrey. And
Oh, really?
6 years ago today.
Happy anniversary.
Was our first sort of date. We had been corresponding for a while, but we finally met on this day 6 years ago. And he was that man. I mean, he really celebrated and wanted to get to know me and, you know, very, very attentive and very emotionally available and all of these qualities that I hadn't been interested in before, very, very wonderfully sexual, very willing to experiment with lots of different things and celebrated my sexuality. So, it took 60 years basically, like 50-something years for me to kind of get it right by doing that kind of work on myself. And then the sexological bodywork training really supported me in being a much better receiver. And when I learned to be a good receiver, I started to have amazing sex. I mean, like really out of the ballpark sexuality because I was super present. And I learned how to heighten my pleasure through sensations. And also because I had the sexological bodywork training, I was also a way better giver because I felt like I really knew my way around a body. So Jeffrey has reaped the benefits of my training. But he's also just been really lovely in terms of me healing so many of those wounds that I had. And I do feel that he is he feels grateful to be with me. I've never been with anyone who felt grateful to be with me. And that was what I needed in order to heal those really early attachment wounds where my mother wasn't grateful. She hated the fact that I existed. So it's really been a profoundly reparative experience, to do that work and then to be open to someone like Jeffrey coming into my life. So
and I remember your beautiful wedding. What was that, about 3 years ago now?
When was it? 2017, yeah. Almost 4 years, yeah, it's true.
Almost 4 years now, yeah. And you looked so feminine. I just saw some pictures the other day. I was going through my Facebook pictures looking for a particular picture, so I was just going through all these old pictures, and I saw your gorgeous, you had your hair done, and you're the kind of a little Mother Nature ring of flowers around your head, and just really saw you in your feminine. It was so beautiful.
Thank you. It took a while.
I'm gonna
to embrace that.
Yeah, I'm going to stop right here and just, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Leading Edge Love Radio, and this is your host, Sumati Sparks, the Open Relationship Coach at sumatisparks.com. And we're speaking with Arielle Giaretto, who is a, whatever she is, a somatic sex educator and senior faculty, look at my notes, senior faculty for the Somatic Experiencing Trauma Institute. And if you have any questions for Arielle, feel free to call into the show. It's live right now. So if you're listening to it live, you can call area code 657-383-1132, and you won't interrupt us. You'll be put on hold, and we'll get to your call at the right time. Again, that number is 657-383-1132. So I'm going to ask a question until somebody else does. So I didn't know some of these things about you. I had a really similar experience where my father would repeatedly tell the story over and over again about how he wanted a boy because my sister was older than me and my mom had a couple of miscarriages. And so they figured like this was the only other child they're going to have. And they were really hoping for a boy. And my dad heard my first cry because I guess fathers didn't go into the birth room at that time. And so he heard me cry from outside, and he thought, oh, that big, loud cry is bound to be a boy. And then he went in and saw that it was me. And so that story I heard over and over again. And I'm just like, wow, okay, I guess I'm supposed to be a boy. So similarly, I, you know, became what they call a tomboy, which is such a stupid word anyway, tomboy. Yeah. What the hell is that?
It's true.
Became an athlete, and I didn't want anything to do with the domestic chores. I, like, intentionally didn't learn to cook. I didn't want to learn to sew, like all those home economic things that they used to teach us. I ran in the other direction from those things. So just wanted to relate, you know, to you. I didn't realize that you had that same thing. But my question is, so I heard you say that you did some deep reimagining work around your prenatal stuff. But what about, like, birthing? So I had a traumatic birth where my mother, I was breech and my arm broke, my elbow dislocated. And my umbilical ruptured, and then back then they put all the babies into an incubator. That's just what they did. And so, you know, here I am, this wonderful, warm, soft womb, and then, bam, welcome to the world, break your arm, rupture your connection with your mother, throw you into the incubator. So clearly that's why I get triggered around feeling unwanted, you know, like when I'm, when jealousy comes up for me, it's usually around not being wanted. So are there also, like, reimagining techniques that you can do for birthing trauma?
Absolutely. And I did those for years with people. And so, you know, it would be a kind of, and I just want to say that the imagining is also profoundly somatic, meaning it's not just a visual, but it's also directing the person to have a completely new and different experience that they are able to sense and take in from the inside. So I can give you an example. So if I was doing a session with you, I would have you tune into, like, try to drop into that newborn experience or that experience just before you came out. Do you know if you were a C-section? Because they often C-section breech.
No, and back then, no, they didn't. And back then, not only did they believe that you're supposed to turn the baby around.
Right, exactly.
But my mom was Catholic and didn't do painkillers, so I was constantly hearing her say, oh, your birth was so horrible. Oh, my God.
Oh, great. What a message
every
that
time
is.
It was mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, what a message. Yeah, and you see, even that what the baby is so aware of is that that there's a message there that if I move forward in the world, well, you actually came feet first. If I drop into the world, I cause others pain. And that can actually really inhibit people too. So if we were working together, I would have you completely redo it. And probably not necessarily redo the fact that you were breached, because that, if you want to look at it, it's like that was your way of coming in. And a lot of doctors and even midwives try to change that, like it's bad. But often, if you just get out of the way of a breech birth, they will just pop out. And I've been at them, you know. Sometimes they are terrifying. And the cord wrapping around the neck is the big problem, you know, because they sometimes babies will suffer oxygen deprivation. But I would just invite you to think about, you know, how you would like to come in a different way. So we would sit with that, and you would drop into yourself, and you know, we are of the same era where whether you were breech or not, it was standard medical procedure to take the baby away right away, put them in an incubator, and do scheduled feedings. And that has set up a couple of generations of eating disorders, you know, of feeling abandoned, of feeling like I can't trust my own hunger. I can't trust my own need for affection. I'm on somebody else's schedule. And so the reparative experience is often that once you came out, you know, maybe someone would have attended to your arm, but in a really gentle way, kind of cleaned you up and then laid you on your mother's chest. And that's usually what babies want, is they want to come out relatively quietly. They want to come out into a regulated, safe, quiet space, not the emergency room situation that most hospitals provide. And then there's a kind of what I call, you know, what we all call a resting down. And that little one being able to really drop into that awareness of the mother's chest and recognizing that you could have laid there as long as you needed. So that would be your timing. And really profound things can happen when you redo those moments of you know, what does that baby want? Well, usually, again, that baby just wants it quiet, wants to lay on the mom's chest, wants to take in her warmth and her support. Might be hungry, might not. That's not always necessarily something that happens in the first, you know, half hour of a birth. And so just really leading you through a kind of reattachment, reestablishing that mom is a safe and quiet and warm place. And that kind of thing. So that's what I would be focusing on. And then
you know,
I would
what comes
you,
up for me when you
tell me.
Sorry, what comes up for me when you say that is when people want to have some kind of open relationship, whether it's, you know, polysexual or polyamorous, it sometimes, you know, a bonded couple will play together and will have, you know, one lover that they share or a couple that they play with. But if you're ever separating from your bonded partner and you're going off with someone else, and the one that's kind of being left, for lack of a better word, the one that's like not with someone else, they're like at home that night, they might need, I'm just wondering, like, would that help them to reconnect, to have that physical touch? Because I often ask the couples I work with, like, what do you need when your partner comes back from seeing their other lover? Because some people, like one person said, I want to be able to dance for you. Like they're into dance, and that was how they wanted to reconnect, was by being witnessed in their dance. So everybody kind of has different ways. Like one person's like, well, I don't want to talk about it for a while. Let's just go about our day, and then when I'm ready, I'll ask you. Or another person, I had a lover where I would say, I want you to make love to me as soon as you get back, and I want to cry while we're making love. Like that's how I'm going to release my fear. So I'm wondering if just a suggestion of, like, maybe not even talking, but just, you know, maybe taking your clothes off and just hugging, like, in bed, like, just feeling your bodies together would give you that regulation that you're talking about.
Yeah, it very well could. Yeah. And, you know, again, that sense of this isn't going to end. And a lot of babies, I think, that had those kinds of scheduled feedings or were taken away from mom never quite totally trust that someone's going to stick around, even if they're completely mm-hmm. reliable and they're not going anywhere. So you're absolutely right, you know, discovering what is needed from that really deep young place to reconnect. And it might be, and this is one of the things that I did a lot with the man I dated before Jeffrey, David, who you know, is that I used him a lot, you know, where I would rest my head on his chest and I would be imagining that this was my little one. And I'm not making him into a father figure. I was making him into an attachment, you know, figure that I could rest down on him. And this was something that I could do with him that I wasn't able to do with my mother. And it
did create...
With
his consent, I'm assuming.
Of course. I mean, well, what I mean is that when we were just lying around listening to music mm-hmm. or something, I was really mm-hmm. consciously, of course, I was really consciously working it, you know, in my own mm-hmm. body. So that's what mm-hmm. I mean is that... I was kind of having dual awareness. I was there with David. We were hanging out, listening to music, but I was also connecting with my little one that didn't get that. That didn't get mm-hmm. that felt sense of being able to rest down and not worry about anybody going anywhere. Yeah, and mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. I realized in some of those situations that I was never letting myself kind of rest on someone. I might have my head on their chest, or I might even be holding someone, but there was a part of me ready to flee. You know, I was mm-hmm. already tense and ready to jump away if I needed to, which is what I did with my mom. And so because of that, and this is, we can get back to your question, which I love, is that if someone is able to stay present with the receiving of contact, then it does calm down that a lot of that jealousy. It calms down a lot of that wondering, are you going to be there? Because mm-hmm. you can take in the pleasure of your partner in the moment. And that's another thing that very, very few people are able to do, which is to stay 100% present in taking in the connection that is happening. And mm-hmm. again, that's one of the core things that can help with jealousy, is noticing when your partner is there and really feeling their love, you know, not so much their commitment, but in a way their reliability, you know, that they're reliable. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and that will calm down a nervous system enough to get to that place of generosity that we all want to get to when we're sharing our partners, is that place of, yeah, I love you so much, I want to be generous, and, you know, you have the fun that you want to have, and I can take care of myself in that, and if I can't, I trust that I can ask you for when you come home, make love to me so I can cry, or when you come mm-hmm. home, just lie still and let me rest down on you so that little scared one in me can take in that you're here and that you didn't go anywhere. So, mm-hmm. you know, you can work that on many levels.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And I want to be inclusive here and acknowledge that not everybody is non-monogamous from a primary partner model. More and more people are exploring non-hierarchical models of non-monogamy. And so if you don't have a, quote, primary partner or hierarchical partner, and you have multiple loves that they're all equally important to you, you can ask whoever to do this for you, just like Arielle, quote, used David to reimagine her little one getting the bonding that she didn't have as a baby. you can ask any of your loves to do that for you. It doesn't have to be a primary partner. It can be anyone who can hold the space for you in a beautiful way like that. Because
I mean,
so much of the early...
It doesn't even have to be a lover.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. It doesn't have to be
a lover.
I mean, it doesn't have to be even a lover. It's like when I embrace a girlfriend, I can take in her loving attention as well, right? It's like every embrace. If I'm walking down the street and someone makes eye contact with me, I can take that in and go, wow, that person sees me. So it's a multi-layered, multi-faceted taking in whatever we, you know, missed as a child, and that also bleeds into our partners, you know, being sexual with our partners if we're sharing them. So yeah, you're right, and I just want to express that we can do it with anybody.
Thank you. So, Aria, I've invited Ariel to collaborate on a workshop with me, which is happening on, I'll get the date in a second. I don't have it on the top of my head. We're also collaborating with a kink expert who is also non-monogamous. And we're going to talk about, the date is May 15th, and it's 3 p.m. Pacific time. It's called the J Word, Jealousy and Trauma in Non-Monogamous and Kink Relationships. So as we all go out there on the skinny branches and practice alternative relationship styles and alternative sexuality, we sometimes tap into these traumas, and we all have them. We all have them. That's why I know this. I work with people all the time, and we all have our stuff. Nobody's perfect, and I just the other day got a new client who is a pretty high-profile relationship coach themselves, and it's really interesting because I see their public profile on social media, and then I get to hear like what their struggles are. So we all have those struggles, and that's why I can talk so freely about my issues, because I know we all have them. And so you don't have to be somebody who identifies as having a horrible traumatic birth like I did. It could just be, you didn't get the ice cream that you wanted. You know, we all just have these little traumas in our body that live in there, and they show up sometimes when we push our edges, you know, by opening our relationship, by letting our partner have other sweeties that they fall in love with or that they have a hot sex life with. These things are inherently triggering to our sense of stability and connection. So in this workshop, Ariel is going to talk about how to dance with those traumas and how to have a really happy life even while you have them, because they don't entirely go away. I'm going to ask you to talk about that in a second. I noticed that these things don't entirely go away. We just learn to befriend them more. And so I'm going to ask Ariel to give us some exercises in this J-Word workshop where we can really have an experience in the workshop of the visualizing that she talked about earlier, where even though you might be home and you're on the computer, that you can actually have an experience of rewiring your brain and something that you can take away with you. And then Orpheus Black will talk about the unique issues of jealousy that come up in kink relationships, particularly the dominance and submission open relationships, because there's a sense of consensual ownership when you're in a dominance and submission, a DS relationship. And so how can you have multiple partners when you're playing with ownership kink, you know? So there's some unique stuff there that we're going to go into, and Orpheus is going to give you some awesome experience as well in the workshop and stuff to take home with you. So I just wanted to explain that a little bit. And come back to you, Ariel, and have you tell us a little bit about how do you dance with our core wounds, because I find that they never really 100% go away.
No, you're right. And part of it is getting your head out of it, which is why the somatic work is so important, that when I have a reaction to something like jealousy, it does show up in our bodies, and it's so important. What I've learned from being a somatic therapist, how important it is to bring the body along with you, and we will talk more about some of the things that I've discovered. Both working with people and with my own process when we do the workshop together. I think one of the most important things is to not shame yourself for having a reaction. I think there's in our communities, and we have to differentiate between our belief system and what our body is actually capable of. And I think sometimes people have a belief that open relationships are the right way, but their bodies are freaking out. And when their bodies are freaking out, it's just like a red flag. It's like the body is saying, pay attention to me. Don't keep telling me this is okay. You know, don't ignore me. You know, the body is like a two-year-old, you know. It'll just keep jerking on your shirt and going, pay attention, pay attention. If the more you ignore the body, the bigger and more of a tantrum that it does. If you just turn around and go, what? You know, what do you want? And are able to go inside and work with the areas that are what we call activated or triggered, you can't necessarily 100% get it to go away, but you can take it down a few notches. And so it's really, really, really important that you don't try to second-guess your body because you have a belief that open relationships is a beautiful thing. So when I'm working with helping people open up the relationship, I want them to honor their reactions and recognize there's a very, very good reason that, you know, it's not that you're fucked up or that you're possessive or... You know, and I'm one of those people that do not believe that jealousy is a social construct. You know, jealousy is a very, very real thing. Animals feel it. You know, everybody, a lot of mammals feel jealousy. And I'll talk more about this in the workshop because I've worked in Muslim countries where people have multiple wives, where multiple wives are the social construct, and there is still a huge amount of jealousy, you know. So it's not something that we necessarily learn by growing up in a monogamous environment. It's deeper than that. You know, we don't
want... Well, I've seen
like
dogs will, you know, if some dogs, like if you, you know, I have a friend that has a dog, and if I... my dog is Tallulah and his dog is Prince. So if my dog sits on Prince's human's lap, Prince will get really mad and like squeeze in between, and, you know, get off
oh,
my
yeah.
lap.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. My puppy does that. We went, in fact, just before this talk, she goes and plays with these two Wheaton Terriers, and they love me, you know. And they come over and they jump all over me, and she, who outweighs them by about 25 pounds, pushes them off my lap and tries 50 pounds of her, gets on my lap and says, mine, you know, basically.
Wow.
She is claiming me back, you know. And we have very healthy attachment, you know. And so that's the point, is that it's not something that's learned. Possessiveness is not learned. You know, I think that culture supports those notions, but we're really talking about a deep visceral experience that we need to honor and recognize, not necessarily always surrender to it, but listen to
it. I'm glad you said that. I often call it trying to be more evolved than you are.
Exactly.
So, like we say, like, I've been doing polyamory for X number of years. Why am I still feeling this way? I shouldn't be feeling this way.
Right. Yeah, and our job, you know, as coaches and therapists is to normalize that and go, well, of course, you love this person. You know? And so, and what I like to do is sort out the kind of arrangement with the least amount of pain, right? Like, how do we start mm-hmm. with the least amount of pain and work our way up to devastation, you know? And mm-hmm. I say that mm-hmm. kind of, you know, laughingly, but, you know, we can also talk about that in the workshop of how, when someone mm-hmm. is really, really jealous, how to work with that and mm-hmm. what that might look
Great.
Like. So, but you're right. We don't really ever 100% heal.
Right. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Just, you know, I think everybody will get a lot out of that. Again, just to remind everybody that it's called the J word, jealousy and trauma in non-monogamous and kink relationships. And we have Ariel as well as Orpheus Black. We'll be talking about the unique issues of jealousy in a kink relationship. And I'm going to give you a link for where to register. And that is sumatisparks.com/the J word. sumatisparks.com/the J word. You can register there. There's still super early bird tickets available, so grab your tickets soon. So, Ariel, it's been really fantastic talking with you. I've just enjoyed it so much. The time just flew by. I want to also give you a couple minutes to share with our listeners a little bit more about your private practice and whether you're doing any online workshops of your own. So please take your time to share anything else that you want to share about what you're up to.
Okay. Well, currently my practice is totally closed. I have a very, very small practice. The pandemic has forced me to take all of my somatic experiencing work. I'm a full-time teacher for the Somatic Experiencing Institute, so I teach a large number of trainings, and so I've had to stop my private practice, and I don't plan on opening it again. But I am just beginning to try to do some professional workshops for other therapists about working with the nuances of sexuality trauma and sexual trauma. And that's kind of where my focus is. I'll be offering an online workshop in July. So if any of you are professionals out there and you want more training in working with sexual abuse and sexual dysfunction, that could be something that could interest you. My website is fullembodiment.org, and it's horribly difficult to spell. So it is embodiment, E-M-B-O-D-I-M-E-N-T. So fullembodiment.org is my website, and there'll be an online program in July. And hopefully I will start up as soon as we're out of COVID. I want to meet live. I do workshops for just the general public around sexuality and healing their early sexual trauma. And I do one for couples and one that is, you know, also based on kink and some playing with power dynamics. So one of these days, probably not till 2022, I'll be able to offer more of those because I insist on them being live. We really need to be able to move around a room, and I will probably do another retreat. My partner, Tom Callanan, who did the Sex Bod training with me, he developed full embodiment with me. And he is a sexual abuse survivor, and when we join forces, we are so dynamic because he's really able to speak to men. He's able to speak to the wounded sexual abuse survivors, where I'm the sort of wild and crazy, sexy, let's just, you know, fucking have fun. We're a really nice balance for each other, and we will probably do another retreat in Costa Rica.
We're almost out of time, so I'm going to stop
okay.
you there.
Okay,
right, so thanks again so much, and we'll see you at the J Word Workshop. Have a lovely
okay.
evening, Ariel.
Okay, thank you,
Sumi. Okay, so next week on Leading Edge Love Radio, we will be talking with Lisa Rizzoli, who is a Tantra and Sacred Sexuality Coach. So join us next week at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on Leading Edge Love Radio right here. Good night, everyone.